Welcome back, WNST, Tassel Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We're getting ready for game day around here this week. We will be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Friday morning at Fadley's down in Lexington Market. That's the old market next to the new market. They're opening in Catonsville, and I'm really looking forward to celebrating the holidays, talking about shipping crab cakes to all of our friends all over the country. And you can't get them there, so you got to ship them from here. We'll be at Fadley's next Friday night. Luke Jones is going to be out in Owings Mills all week long. He was there on Wednesday. He'll be there again before the weekend, again on Sunday. At some point, Lamar Jackson will appear. It just was not on Wednesday. So if you are hearing this through the weekend, I don't think you know when Lamar is going to appear, when we know. All I know is we're one day into practice, at least as we're recording this and getting ready for the game. And, you know, it's a loss week out there, right? They haven't had one of those in a month. So I would think the temperature changes dramatically in what my buddy Jimmy Schwartz used to call an RA week.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly want to be able to bounce back. I think what's interesting is, Nestor, if you and I were talking about this back in May when the schedule was released, I think there was a lot of excitement. The idea of Russell Wilson and the Broncos coming to town, the idea that this could be a game that has some substantial playoff ramifications for both teams. I think there were some questions about how good Denver would be and what the expectations were for an AFC West that hasn't necessarily come to fruition. Yeah, you know, when you look at the Broncos, you look at the Raiders, you know, the Chargers have been up and down, and well, Kansas City's run away with it the way that the Chiefs typically have over the last 5, 6, 7 years. But I mean, what a mess the Broncos have been. As much as we've talked about the aftermath of what happened Sunday in Jacksonville and another fourth quarter blown lead and the frustration there, I mean, we're still talking about a 7-4 football team. We're still talking about a team that's in first place, still the favorite to win, given the fact that you look at the Ravens schedule on paper compared to the Bengals. No guarantees either way, but on paper, it's a more favorable slate of opponents. So you look at this game and you're hoping that you can go out there, start fast. I think this is a Broncos team that I would say circling the drain, but they've looked dead for weeks. I mean, their defense has played well to the point where we're seeing defensive linemen bark at Russell Wilson on the field like we did last Sunday when they lost to Carolina. But even their defense the last couple of weeks starting to show a few more, you know, cracks in the armor to think, okay, it feels like this is a team, unlike Jacksonville, who I think is buying into Doug Peterson, is believing in Trevor Lawrence, still flawed, still not a perfect team, still not a excusable loss as far as the fashion in which the Ravens lost that game. But I felt like a team that's moving in the right direction with a new regime. Whereas Nathaniel Hackett, I mean, the big question now is he going to make it through the season or is he going to get fired at the end of the season? You know,
when they're going to let him on the plane Sunday night, right?
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. So, I mean, that's really where we are. So, and we talked a little bit about this with Carolina, and I think, you know, some principles of that game hold true here. Certainly a better quarterback on paper, but again, look at Russell Wilson. There have been very few signs that he's going to start looking like Russell Wilson all of a sudden. This
Even
is
his
a team,
birthday party didn't go well the other day.
I mean, what, half the team showed up on their off day? I think some people made a little too much of that. That honestly seems like...
Do you remember the Elvis Gerback story?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. So Elvis Gerback was, you know, obviously signed here at the end of the Dilfer Super Bowl in 2001. And one of the knocks on Elvis, and I actually talked to him about this at the barn, because he came out to the barn early that year, week two, week three, and Elvis and I got along well. He was a guy who trusted me, liked me, talked to me a little bit in the corner of the locker room, told me things that probably shouldn't have told media people, like literally at that time, 21 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Elvis had a birthday party in, or threw a party, a holiday party, something. He threw a party in Kansas City, and no one came from the team.
Yeah.
And so when the Ravens acquired him, this was before the internet, before any of that, was that bad teammate, bad guy, nobody likes the guy. So that was the word on Elvis Gerback coming over here. So I found it interesting 20 years later to have this quarterback that is, you know, top flight, heavily paid, celebrity girl, like all of that, that it became a story that, you know, somehow players didn't like him enough to come to his birthday party.
Well, that's funny. And I assume you did not see the movie Draft Day, the Kevin Costner movie, which if you recall, we actually, there was actually some publicity done for that on Radio Row several years back. I don't think that's when Jennifer Garner came to see us. That might've been another time, but the Bo Callahan was the fictional quarterback in that, and the Browns and Sonny, whatever his name was, Kevin Costner's character, he's the GM of the Browns. Bo Callahan was the quarterback, and the knock on him in college was that no one had come to his birthday. So I wonder if the Elvis Gerback, I wonder if that was kind of a, what do they call that, a character composite or
Yeah,
something
there
like
you go.
that?
Sure. Yeah,
I
part of the
wonder if there was
theme.
something along those lines. But to bring it back on the field, I mean, certainly what you mentioned about Russell Wilson, I think it's been fascinating to see how Geno Smith and the Seahawks have fared this year. And you know, I don't, I think it certainly speaks to maybe some of the issues that people thought were on the front office side and on the coaching side in Seattle. Maybe it was a little more Russell Wilson than we thought, but he hasn't played well. I mean, if you watch him, and my goodness, we saw what it felt like the first 5 or 6 weeks of the season, the Broncos were in prime time every single week. And okay, in September, we've seen guys, especially with a new team, struggle and get out of the gate slow and it looked choppy. It hasn't gotten any better. And I don't want to say the guy's done because I think, you know, we've seen veteran quarterbacks look really bad in a season and then they bounce back. Brett Favre famously was that way at a couple different points and then bounced back and still had some really good years after that. But it hasn't gone well. And when you look at the trade value they gave up to acquire him, when you look at the contract, a new ownership group, a coach who
Well, that
looks
they're
like,
lousy draft picks going to Seattle, right? Like, literally, like, the worse they are, the better it is for Seattle at this point.
exactly. So you have a team that's a mess. So to bring it back to the context of the Ravens, you start fast, and if you can march down the field like they did against Jacksonville, but the difference be score inside the red zone a couple times, and you go up 14-0 in the first quarter, that's a team that they'll quit. I feel very confident about that. But as I pointed out, it is a defense that still statistically has rated very highly. It's one reason why the Broncos haven't been blown out. As bad as their offense has been, their defense has kept these games respectable and close. But I do think as the calendar now turns to December, and you're talking about a team that very clearly is not going to be in the playoff race. I mean, they're 3-8. At what point do those defensive players who have been playing so well, when do we start seeing those business decisions kick in? When do we start seeing guys playing for themselves? And it's hard to blame them when you get to a certain point where you're that far out of it and you know that you're not going to be making the playoffs. So I think that's where we've seen that Broncos defense the last couple of weeks not look as stellar as it had looked earlier in the season. And I think that's where, if you're the Ravens, if you really want to put the memory of last Sunday and the fourth quarter disappointment behind you, you start fast and you put yourself in a position where you have a chance to run away from a team. Not going to pick a blowout win because we know the issues the Ravens have had that even in some of their more comfortable wins, they haven't exactly blown teams out, you know, by four touchdowns or anything like that. So, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to see that kind of a final outcome, but certainly hoping the Ravens can come home, get themselves righted, hope that some of the offensive momentum that they found in the second half on Sunday carries over, and you hope that the defense, which, you know, fourth quarter, I don't even want to say it was a hiccup, it was a collapse in the fourth quarter in Jacksonville. That aside, it is a defense that's played well in recent weeks, played very well in recent weeks, and this is an offense that they should be able to go out and really put some heat on Russell Wilson and make things very difficult for that Broncos offense. So if they do, I think we'll be talking about a win on Sunday evening. But again, it's on the Ravens to start fast and not give a 3-8 football team hope that it can hang around and have a chance to win this one.
We on the Lamar Jackson thing, just forget the tweet and like all that, and that's going to be in his head this week, and for Chad Steele protecting him and Harbaugh having to take the heat and the players. Lamar's play and the way he's played and the way the offense is playing, the one thing I would say about Denver's defense and them winning the game, you know, like if there are mistakes on offense, if guys are fumbling, one thing about Lamar, he doesn't throw the ball around and get it picked off much. So, you know, taking care of the football, throwing the ball or running the ball, depending on the weather this week and what they're trying to do to the Broncos. To me, the Broncos' hope is taking the ball away. And the Ravens don't give the ball up so easily. So I would say defensive turnovers here are the only way the Broncos are going to win because I've seen their offense. I've watched them play a couple games last few weeks. They stink.
Yeah, their special teams are terrible too. So if you want to have something else to point to that the Ravens should have a very dramatic edge, although the Ravens had some special teams hiccups, which certainly don't expect, but they had on Sunday with
Hey, you miss
Duvernay with some.
167-yard field goal and Luke's killing you, right?
Oh no. I'm talking Duvernay and some of the, talking about a Pro Bowl returner with some questionable decisions, but letting the ball bounce and trying to take it out of the end zone the one time, or I guess more so going lateral. But again, getting back to your question with Lamar Jackson, I mean, your point is well taken about how he's taken care of the football. When you kind of looked at, we know how phenomenal the start to the season was through the air. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns, two interceptions over the first three games, but then you looked. Two interceptions against Buffalo, one against Cincinnati, one against the Giants. We all remember that one. But since then, he's only thrown one interception, and he's done a much better job taking care of the football. Now, he had a fumble on the fourth down. Wasn't going to get it anyway. So it really wasn't a fumble as much as it was the turnover on downs anyway. And it really didn't change the field position, anything like that. It was just a statistical black mark on his record. But I think what was encouraging to me was to see how he was able to, and the offense as a whole was able to come alive later in the game. I mean, he throws an absolutely gorgeous pass to DeSean Jackson. And I know that really buoyed the final numbers, and he only completed 50% of his passes. I get that, but it was still 7.9 yards per pass attempt. I
Andrews
think.
catch it, drops the touchdown. I mean, the drop
Right,
balls
right.
are also like
No question.
unacceptable. Yeah, I mean,
No
he did not
question.
play poorly on Sunday, right? Like, for all the hubbub and all that, had some overthrows and whatnot, but it was not a poor effort. It was a poor team effort
No.
for guys dropping the ball.
No question about it. While I do think there's been a little bit of hyperbole, I've seen some people characterize the DeMarcus Robinson diving attempt in the end zone as a drop. That's not a drop. Now, if you want to say a dynamic, true number one wide receiver makes that play, then I'll hear that. I've been banging the table about that for months and months about this
Where
team's
was Odell Beckham
lack
last
of
week when you
dynamic
needed him,
pass
right?
catching weapons.
Yeah.
Sure. The ball to Josh Oliver that, if you look from the other angle, it goes off his one hand. Look, does a fully healthy Mark Andrews make that play? Does a Travis Kelce make that play? Sure. Defining that as a drop, I think that's a reach. So I do think there was some hyperbole, but there's certainly, the Andrews one in the end zone, absolutely a drop. Kenyon Drake had a bad drop. Devin Duvernay had a bad drop. I'm with you. To me, it wasn't Lamar's best passing performance, but for as much
He
as we
played
have
well
talked
enough for
about,
them to win.
no question,
You
no
know, I
question.
mean, for all this, Nestor hates Lamar. Like, it's great. He was fine. He could be better. He needs to be better. And that's my point, is that even when
Sure.
he's perfect, they might drop the ball.
Yeah, oh, no question. And yeah, I mean, and I've talked about it. I've written about it at BaltimorePositive.com. It's really been the tale of two. It's not two seasons because it's not split down the middle, but the first 3 weeks of the season, you were re reminded of 2019. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns in 3 weeks. I mean, that was 2019 kind of role, maybe even better when you consider pushing the ball down the field. Since then, it hasn't been all that terribly impressive passing the ball, the football. But that said, certainly would not put the Jacksonville game among his rougher, roughest performances of the year throwing the football. It needs to be better as a whole. I mean, we talked about it, and I know you talked a lot about the red zone offense and what you wrote at BaltimorePositive.com. I took the stance of really taking the defense to task because even as poor as the red zone offense was for three quarters, they still scored 27 points at the end of the day. And okay, fine. I'll hear that the defense certainly set them up on a short field at one point in time. So even if you want to say they still scored into the 20s. So, you look at it from that standpoint, it was a team loss. Do they need to be better? No question about it. They need to be able to run the football consistently. I think that's something, as much as we focused on the passing game and the Jaguars' poor secondary and thinking that the Ravens might be able to take advantage of that, and they really didn't until the very end of the game, necessarily. I think this week with Denver, they've been much more vulnerable, against the run, even though their pass defense is, kind of gone the other way in the last couple of weeks here recently. So, they have to be better. There's no question about it. And Sunday was absolutely a team loss. For me, it was almost like it was one of those ink blots, right? You kind of look at that and say, okay, was it the offense? Was it the defense? Well, what about the special teams? And no, I'm not talking about Justin Tucker missing from 67, to be clear. That was a team loss. What about the coaching? What about the play clock? All these different things we've talked about. And frankly, we'll continue to talk about until this offense looks more consistent. We've said it all year. It looks really strong for long stretches. Statistically, it still ranks very favorably overall compared to, let's face it, Nestor, we've seen some really lousy Ravens offense over the years. This is not that. This is not late era Joe Flacco with, throwing the ball to Michael Campanaro and Mike Wallace and having no running game whatsoever. This is still way better than that. However, we also know that this is a team that has designs to do more than just get in the playoffs. And that's where I'll keep coming back to how this team profiles compared to the rest of the AFC. Talking about those top teams, I'm still not sure. Are we going to get an answer against the Denver Broncos? No, we're not.
Well, if
But
they
you want
lose,
to take, well, you want to, well, sure. If you're looking for a negative answer, maybe that would happen. I'd be very surprised by that, though.
well, I
I
mean, this is
think
one of those games they have to win now, right? Because
to
it's,
take
as
care
you
of business,
pointed
sure.
out, like, this is a take care of business home game here. This is the stepping stone to them making the playoffs. They can't trip in these games. But that being said, I don't know. It's an NFL team coming in here. That's wounded. I you say quit in the second half and all that. I'm not ready to throw that on the Broncos just yet.
I am if the Ravens start fast and jump on them early. If it's a case where, as I said, you have two promising drives and the Broncos hold you to 6 points, then this will probably play out similarly to the Carolina game a couple weeks ago. I could absolutely see that.
Well, Ravens are only 8.5 point favorite. I
That's
mean, it's not like they're a 13-point favorite or something because nobody's all that hot on the Ravens right now,
yeah,
especially not their offense.
right. Although, I mean, that's still a pretty big line for NFL as NFL games go, but I hear you. And again, that's not me saying what I said a few moments ago is not saying that when you check out my five predictions for Sunday at BaltimorePositive.com over the weekend, that I'm picking the Ravens 41 to 10. I mean,
Oh, your point's
until the
well taken that
Ravens.
they have no ability to come back from 13 points down without a lot of help from the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at how they profiled. I mean, what's interesting to me is I saw a statistic earlier this week. I think it was ESPN. It may have been Bill Barnwell. I think. I don't want to quote to that it was definitely him. But one of the things I saw about Russell Wilson statistically, which had to just made me laugh, was when he has actually thrown the ball deep, it actually has still looked okay. I guess they just haven't, for whatever reason, they haven't done it a lot. I don't know if it's their O-line. I don't know if it's Wilson not trusting his receivers or what he's seeing from the opposing defense, whatever. I mean, it's been a very bad operation. I mean, just
He's
look
the
at
most
the.
maligned guy in the league right now, literally, right?
And he should be. I mean, look at the money he's making and how poor he's been. I mean, you look at the numbers. I mean, their last five games, 10 points against the Carolina Panthers. Okay, I mean, the Ravens only scored 13 against them. So, like, let's not.
And needed a
But
turnover.
16 points against the Raiders, 10 points against the Titans. They cracked 20 plus against Jacksonville. They scored 21 and they lost, they scored 16 against the Chargers. I mean, it's just they are struggling so mightily to score points. And I get it. Offense has come back to the pack a little bit league wide compared to what we've been seeing as far as the trends in recent years. And that's been talked about. A little more running game, a little less scoring. Certainly that's worth mentioning when we're looking at these numbers as a whole. But I mean, you look at them, they've scored 14.3 points per game. This isn't 1986. I mean, that's awful. That is awful. So, at some point in time, it's December. Is the light bulb suddenly going to go on for the Russell Wilson, Nathaniel Hackett regime? I don't think so. So that's not to say that Russell Wilson can't show some shades of Russell Wilson from time to time, but as a whole, you go out and start fast and you build a legit lead, not this 6-0 kind of stuff that we've been seeing the last couple of weeks. That's a team that I would feel very strongly about, the prospects of them quitting and then it finally, having a Ravens game that gets out of hand in a favorable way. So, but you got to go out and you need to convert in the red zone. And until this team can show that play clock woes and whatever else you want to point to, and there's been plenty of discussion about that this week. And as
Well, let's
much as
discuss that a little bit because we haven't discussed that a ton. What I mean, this is not a new issue, but it's an ongoing issue, and it's something that I'm sure in the off season, this is something they put a lot of effort into, right? And a lot of time into. And I think on a week-to-week basis, when there are three, six, eight, 10 plays. By the way, Jonah Schaefer did some nice journalism this week, and I retweeted his play snaps under, was it 5 seconds, 3 seconds, whatever the number was. The Ravens lead the league in snapping the ball late.
Yeah, and let's be very clear. That is not a new development, as you mentioned. You go back and look at, and Football Outsiders is a great site that has pace stats, and it'll show you how many seconds per play. Now, I can't say that it breaks it down so specifically that it's the play clock inside three, but if you look at seconds per play and look at all the different, splits in that regard, the Ravens are right near the bottom in 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022. Now, there's one thing to just be a slower paced offense. It's another thing when you're up against the clock to the point where we're seeing Lamar do the clapping at the,
Well, he's not reading defenses at that point. He's not
he's
checking
trying to get
where
Linderbaum to
he's just
snap the
trying to get
ball.
the ball
Right.
snapped,
Exactly.
like literally.
Exactly. And that's where you start to talk about this, that, okay, it's one thing to talk about the delay of games, which, by the way, they're in a position where the delay of games, they've always taken some here and there, but league high seven delay of games. They had eight all of last year, which you could even understand that. Tyler Huntley had to start a number of games. They had Josh Johnson operating in Cincinnati because of Huntley having COVID and Lamar being hurt. But they only had three in 2020. Okay, that's a COVID year, empty stadiums. It was easier to operate. And they had five in 2019. So they clearly have more, but that's only telling part of the story. How many close calls? How many instances where you get the play off? But as you mentioned, Lamar is focused on the clock and getting the playoff rather than looking at the defense, trying to process what the coverage is. And that's not to say that Lamar isn't able to do that, but if it's rushed, is he able to do that at the optimal level? Especially when you consider he's not operating with the greatest show on turf in terms of the talent around him with pass catchers. So it's just making things that much more difficult. Now, this is where we have to look at the different variables involved. You have the variable of Greg Roman calling the plays. John Harbaugh acknowledged on Monday, but because I asked about the play clock, especially in the first half. I mean, they took a delay of game right off the bat inside the red zone on their opening drive. Probably, was a major factor in them settling for a field goal. He mentioned that Greg Roman acknowledged that he needed to call the plays quicker. If you looked in the second half, you go back and watch the game, they didn't have nearly the same kind of clock issues. The pace was much better. So you have that variable. You have the variable of Lamar Jackson or any quarterback relaying the play in the huddle. Is that happening as quickly and as crisply as it needs to? I know Lamar early in his career talked about standing in front of a mirror reciting the plays. And every young quarterback has that. So that's not a Lamar exclusive thing. But when you're talking about offensive coordinator, quarterback, this is now year four of them being together in concert, in their partnership, with Roman having taken over for Marty Morningwig after 2018. Those things shouldn't be happening. So you look at those two elements. You look at the verbiage of the offense itself. How long are the play calls? Is there a way to streamline that? Very well, Nestor, having been around coaches for decades now, you know that what we talk about as media, what fans talk about is very, very elementary compared to what is actually going on out on the field, what is actually going on in the huddle, what is going on in the playbook, in the meeting room during the week. It is calculus, and we're talking about it in terms of, I don't know, double digit or triple digit,
Well,
multiplication,
that's the best we can
at
do.
best.
But I mean,
Sure.
having been a part of this for years and seeing play sheets and seeing this is third and short, this is third and long, this,
Sure.
these are the concepts that we're practicing during the week. These are the concepts that these are the packages. If we're going to go 11, we're going to whatever we're going to have in the game, there's going to be an installation, there's going to be a package, and there's going to be a play call. And these are the three options we're going to go to if we're in third and three or third and four inside the red zone, whatever, whatever those calls are, they are rehearsed, not just this week. These are the plays that they were looking at in May and June and July and installing in August. And so none of this is new. They're not installing new plays on Wednesday for the Broncos. These are the same plays. It's just if this, then that. And all of that should be predetermined, right? Like literally not scripted at the beginning of games. Teams still do that. Some teams do, some teams don't. I think that's a little I've always thought scripting in the beginning of a game is kind of bizarre to me, given down and distance and what you would want to
Right.
do in certain situations, because I think every play is its own play. But the notion that you can't get the play in, if the verbiage is too long and you're in the fourth year of doing it, and
Right.
Z write 2144 zebra code R, blah, 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 if that's where you are, then shorten it. You're not going
Right,
to shorten it in week
exactly.
11.
Exactly. So, again, as we mentioned, those variables that are a bit of an unknown, right? We're not up in the booth with Greg Roman. You know, we're not Greg Roman deciding on a play, relaying the play. Play goes into Lamar Jackson's headset inside his helmet, him relaying the play to his offense. You know, you want all of that to be as seamless as possible. It should be as seamless as possible into year four of the Roman Lamar offense. But all of those variables that are a bit of an unknown, and we kind of just take their word for it at this point in time aside, we also, this is where we recognize what the Ravens offense is. When you look at the Ravens, so many different formations, so many different substitute packages. Take note. Watch when you're watching Sunday's game, anyone who's listening, take note. And maybe it will be different this week, but if you have the Jacksonville game on, go throw it on one of the first half drives. Take note that all three active running backs typically, in many, not every drive necessarily, but many drives, they're all on the field at some point during that series. Virtually all of their wide receivers are on the field at some point during that series. All of their tight ends, you know, maybe Nick Boyle being the exception as we've seen him play very little this year, but they are constantly substituting in between plays. Now, that's not to say that other teams are just going out there with their same two or three wide receivers. They're sitting in 11 personnel all game. And yeah, they might sub, you know, alternating series with their backs, things of that nature. But the Ravens, I would venture to guess, if I really did a study of this, and I'm not going to do it right now because it would take a very long time, they probably substitute on a play-to-play basis offensively as at least as much as anyone in the league. So you have that. So that's going to take time inherently, guys running on and off the field, whatever assistant's responsible for, hey, you're in the field, you know, you're on the field this play. Get out there, replace so and so. You know, and again, that should all be ironed out over the course of the week, right? So you have that. And then you get to the line of scrimmage. You break the huddle. How much formation shifting the Ravens use, how much motioning they use. Now, there's a lot of it. You see it every single play. And again, there is a great advantage to that. There is a purpose to that. I don't want anyone to think that's me saying that you just shouldn't do that, because it is a great way to get advantageous matchups. It is a great way to put defenders in conflict. It is a great way to figure out if a defense is in man or zone. That's why you run that pre-snap motion. But all of those elements coming together, if that continues to leave you right up against the play clock to the point where you are stressing yourselves and you're not allowing your quarterback to process, or you're not allowing your offensive line to read,
Or
you know,
you
the
have a
front,
distracted quarterback
it all
at the snap, right?
exactly.
Literally.
All of that, if that continues to happen, then you need to streamline and simplify some of that. Now, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, go back to, you know, the 70s and suddenly you're just going to line up in an I formation and that's that. You're going to play very vanilla. But if you do need to simplify things a little bit and maybe not substitute quite as frequently, then that's what you need to do. Another element, you know, as I mentioned, some of the substituting, you know, one thing that has been a little bit of an issue, and people have talked about this a lot. Why is Patrick Ricard on the field so much? Why is Patrick Ricard on the field so much? And I get that to a point. You know, I see the Ravens throwing to him on second and long and third and long on back-to-back plays in the first half. And, you
No
know, it
one
kind of
wants to
makes me,
tackle him. I mean, I would say you get him the
no,
ball. No one wants to tackle
understood.
him.
But if it's if it's second and long or third and long, let's face it, Patrick Ricard's probably not your best option on back-to-back plays in that regard. But take a look at their running backs. How adept are their running backs in pass protection? That is another big part of this. And, you know, that's why Mark Ingram was so great for this offense a couple years back. He was excellent in pass protection. Mike Davis is pretty good in pass protection, but we've seen him be very, very limited as a runner. He's their worst running back as it pertains to, you know, kind of the pecking order as far as who's
Well, when
most
he's on the
effective
field,
running the
they're not
football.
giving him the ball.
Right. I mean, you know, and he's going to be inactive, you know, probably, especially with J.K. Dobbins nearing a return to action. So, but the point is, you get into those positions where, you know, you'd rather not be in empty. I mean, it's not as though the Ravens can't operate from empty. As I've said to you, the one area where I haven't been concerned about their operation is how well their offensive line has played. Albeit it wasn't great missing Ronnie Stanley on Sunday, but their offensive line's been among the best in the league this year. So, but you still don't want to be in a position, especially if teams are trying to blitz, and we know teams love to blitz Lamar Jackson, where you're in a position where, you know, you're short there and you don't have anyone to pick up a blitz and help Lamar out in that way. So long story short, I just explained all that. And that's just really just the most rudimentary synopsis that you'd get of what all goes on with an NFL offense and what specifically goes on with the Ravens offense. That is not to excuse Greg Roman or Lamar Jackson or the entire offense. It's to explain how many variables are there. That's why it's difficult to just pinpoint it, you know, just one issue.
And just say, clean it up. It's not, it's a
it has to be play issue.
But it does need to be cleaned up though. If it is an issue of guys not getting on and off the field quickly enough, or it is an issue if Greg Roman isn't getting the play in quickly enough, he's not deciding on a play. I mean, we've talked about this. Greg Roman, for all the talk about his passing game and passing concepts and questions about that, and I have questions about that, I'm not going to sit here and defend him as it pertains to that. We also know how their running game is a work of art in terms of how many different blocking schemes they use and everything that they draw from. But when you cast that wide of a net, sometimes you can be a victim of paralysis by analysis. And you wonder if that's the case for Roman in some of these situations where they're really up against the clock. So it has to be faster. It has to be more efficient. They cannot be in this position where they're up against the clock constantly, because it's like you said, it's not just getting the play off. It's you want to execute the play. You want the play to be successful. It's not just, hey, we avoided a delay of game penalty. All right, we won. No, that's not winning the play. That's part of it. That's only the first part of it, though. So,
I wonder the success they've had on snaps that come with less than 2 or 3 seconds. You know,
yeah.
The real success that once the ball is snapped and Lamar's under duress and the defense knows it. The defense knows once it gets to 2-1, you know, they're on. And
they can time up their pass rush then, too, if it's down to 1, right? I mean, think about it. You don't even have to watch the ball. It's like you're – and I'm not saying that they're watching the clock, but it does speak to – again,
they're football players. They know they have a heartbeat down there. The good defensive players certainly have a heartbeat.
No question. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there that, look, if this were a first year offensive coordinator and Lamar was in his second year, like 2019, if this were happening more in 2019, I think people would have understood that. Not to say that they'd be happy about it. And certainly you wouldn't like to see it continuing in late November into December, but you would understand it a little more. It shouldn't be happening. And again, whoever's fault it is, it needs to be fixed. And
it should be a mature operation at this point.
Yeah, no question. And that's where, you know, John Harbaugh, and I included this in what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com. He flat out said, we just have to adjust as coaches on that. It's up to us to organize it in a way that we just don't get in those situations. If we have to have less offense or less movements in the plays or whatever it might be, that's just what you do. It's on us. That's something we have to get cleaned up. And it's great to hear that. But we have heard that before. This is not the first time that John and Roman have been asked about the play clock. And it's something that it's a bad look.
Well, you know, he'll take the Stanford job by Sunday, right? He's going to be gone. Right?
We'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, you know, John Harbaugh said on Wednesday, quote, very preliminary. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. And even if Stanford wants to hire him, what does that look like? Is it a case like, if you recall, when Bill O'Brien was the Patriots offensive coordinator, he was hired by Penn State. It was right around the new year. He finished out the season with the Patriots before he joined Penn State, you know, which of course that was.
That's always really weird and awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's strange. I mean, and so much of it, and look, I'm not well versed in the dead periods for recruiting. I mean, college football recruiting, and now with NIL and everything, I mean, it's such a different animal than it was even, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. But yeah, you do wonder how that would play out. And we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I mean, it'll be interesting. And look, we've talked about this talked about it going back to last off season when Wink Martindale was let go. And a lot of people were thinking if there was going to be a coordinator let go, most people thought it was Greg Roman. So, you know, there's certainly some very fair big picture discussion about the status quo and if that's going to be tenable and what's best moving forward for this offense. If we assume the Ravens aren't going to make a deep January run and it kind of finishes in the way that it has the last few years, I think that's a very fair question, especially as we're going to be talking about a franchise quarterback most likely playing on the franchise tag, at least to start the offseason, let's say. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and we'll see if Stanford is that terribly interested in Greg Roman. We'll see how interested Greg Roman might be in that job. Because he's had some dialogue does not mean that ultimately he's going to want that job, but it's certainly an interesting dynamic, although the timing of it is interesting, I think, you know, that gets out there to the media that, you know, on the heels of so much going on with the red zone offense and play clock issues and all that, do wonder if, you know, that was something that, you know, kind of worked out in Greg Roman's favor, that, you know, deflects a little bit from what the offensive operation looked like for three quarters on Sunday.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. Next week, we'll discover the, we'll just discuss the route tree and the rudimentary, you know, alignment of wide receivers and tight ends to pressure a defense in the middle of the secondary, right?
Yeah. Very rudimentary. Again, I am not an expert in X's and O's, but I was trying to give everyone an idea of why we're seeing the play clock issues. And to your point, it could be something different on a number of different occasions, but there are a lot of moving parts, a couple more moving parts in there than I would venture to say for other offenses around the league. I mean, there are offenses around the league. When the Rams were at their best a couple years ago, now's not a good example because the Rams are a disaster, but Sean McVay, when that Rams offense has been humming, they'd be in 11 personnel almost exclusively. Three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back, and they generally weren't subbing a whole lot between plays. Maybe series to series you give your running back a blow, but you know, the way the Ravens are going from Gus Edwards to Kenyon Drake to Justice Hill back to Gus Edwards, you know, and that's just the running back position. It happens at tight end and wide receiver too. It's a lot going on, and look, there's a purpose to that. I don't want to say it's meaningless, but if it's bogging down your operation, it comes down to this. The play clock's not going back to 45 seconds like it was years ago. It's 40, right? For better or for worse. So you have to adapt. And if that means you need to streamline your process a little bit, simplify your process a little bit, then you have to do it, because getting delay of games inside the red zone like we saw in the opening drive last week, I mean, who knows how that game turns out if you score 7 as opposed to 3. You never know that so-called butterfly effect in a game, what happens early on, how it could impact the rest of the game.
Hope they catch the ball this week. I've never liked the Denver Broncos going back to Elway, so we'll have at them this weekend. Luke will be out at the ballpark this weekend. We will be out on social media and all places, including the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery. That'll be next Friday at Fadley's in Lexington Market. We'll be downtown early in the morning. Also, our friends at Goodwill. I'm wearing my Goodwill gear and my Window Nation gear, 866-90-NATION. We had a beautiful experience with our friends at Goodwill last week, feeding folks down at the convention center and trying to get job placement, education. It was an amazing thing. I'm looking forward to talking to Lisa Rusiniak about that next week here on WNST. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.